the past performance is not indicative of future performance, that's typically things that are put in fine print in any investments as you think about them. Typically, diversification is quite key, and not just put all your eggs in one asset class, so at least to diversify.
It's time for the winners. So Churchill, what we'll do here is drum roll. At fifth position with an 8.2% return, if you're in properties and you're selling a property. In the fourth spot, we have commercial bank fixed deposits. For bronze, we had treasury bills. We have our money market funds right around second position. So finally, moving it to the first place where we all hope to be, drum rolls. We have quite by a country mile, equities outperforming every other asset class. Hello, welcome to another episode of Make Money, the podcast. And as you can tell, it's December and always a good time to look back onto the year. And as always, remember, this is Make Money, the podcast, the show where we not only tell, but also show you what's happening to your money and what could happen. Being December and being in the Christmas mood, it's a good time to look back and see where investors made their money in 2025. And I'm happy to have an economist, a guest of the show before, who will guide us through that process. And before I introduce the guest, of course, I will just set some context here. What we saw largely in 2025 was a move away, where a change in terms of the pace of returns, where we saw the low-risk assets delivering a much lower return as the Central Bank of Kenya began cutting interest rates. And at this point, I'll plug in the guest for this week, Mr. Churchill Ogutu. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. And what a year it has been. Now we're in December.
I pick up the conversation from just what context I was trying to set, being that we saw the Central Bank of Kenya continue its pivot from a tight monetary policy environment, basically high interest rates, to a low interest rates environment. And what we did see, of course, is returns on those low-risk assets starts to come down. So be it your money market funds, be it your treasury bonds, and that then reduces the opportunity cost for investing in these types of assets, pushing investors again to take more risk. And we saw equities also rising. So that for me is a summary of 2025. What for you would summarize for you 2025 from a returns perspective?
You've nailed it based on the diversification, what you're seeing from low-risk assets, moving up the high-risk assets, so to speak. But if you take a step back and look at the macroeconomic environment underlying even some of the policy moves that you saw over the course of this year, we're looking at the growth. So far, we've seen the numbers for the first two quarters slightly higher than where we were the first two quarters of last year, average of close to 5%. Last year was around 4.7%. Just shows that, okay, there's some slight improvement in terms of the growth prospects. I've seen that inflation was relatively stable. And also, we've seen this stability of the shilling. I mean, it's been the discourse over the course over the last couple of months. And it's been at the fore that the stability in the shilling. And if you think about the returns, and if you consider that you also have foreign investors coming to look at some of the investments in the country, there's the element of the return in terms of the performance of the underlying assets, and also there's the foreign exchange aspects to factor in. So from the perspective that there's been some stability in the shillings, it removes the FX component. So they're just looking at the return in terms of the underlying assets. The other thing also in terms of the environment that you've seen, the external sector, it's because of the stability in the shilling and because of some of the issues that underpin the external sector. It has also in a way brought some stability in terms of the industries or the firms that rely in the external sector, either in terms of the finished products or in terms of the intermediary products that they have to input in parts of their production. So that has been a stabilizing factor for some of those firms. On the fiscal side, albeit you can say that there's been some risk, but I think one of the sticky points this time around in terms of what typically plays out on the taxation policies, unlike what we've seen the last financial years, at least this time there wasn't that aggressive push. And that in itself brought some level of stability in terms of the taxation policies, even in the underlying firms, how they think about taxation policies or the unpredictability about that. So this time around, we didn't have a sense that there was that aggressive push, which in that now sort of reduced the unpredictability, even within the business environment. So on the back of that, so there's been a shift away from the low-risk assets and moving up the asset classes, so to speak.
We'll be looking at the top five places where investors made their money in 2025 a little later, towards the end. But coming back to that shift that we did see from low-risk assets to a bit moderate to higher-risk assets, the question here always comes about to someone looking at this and wondering, do they just see, because the shift is happening, do they also follow the same way? And case in point, we had a discussion much earlier within the season about the low-risk return falling and what people should do. Naturally, do you just gravitate the same way as other market players, institutional investors, and more professional investors are doing? Or what do you do for someone who would come to you and say, hey, Churchill, the MMFs are no longer giving me what they are giving me in, say, November 2024 or June 2024? Do you just gravitate the same way that the risk environment has changed here? And does it also mean you naturally pivot?
If you look at the context as to how money market funds, the MMFs, were favored, we are coming at a point whereby there's a bit of some uncertainty. People who are now starting to think of where do we at least park some money in case things go belly up in the foreseeable future. The money market funds made sense, and also on the back of the high interest rate regime. So it was easy now to put your money or to park your money, essentially because money market funds is the easiest way that you can start having a pulse to investors. And you're speaking about the retail investors, so that's the easiest route for them to start investing. Money market funds, even looking at the minimum in terms of investing size, as low as 500 shillings. So that's been quite easy. But then again, if you take a step back, yes, we know about the asset classes. We know that there's cash and near cash instruments, so that's where the money market funds come in. We also have other funds that are there. We also have, in terms of the assets, we have now the fixed income. And that's the treasury bonds to a large extent also. You can think of treasury bills, but that's pretty much like a cash and near cash instruments. We have fixed deposits also within that range of the low risk assets. And then on the extreme of that, we have now the equities, which has been quite volatile. This is now the asset allocation. From an asset allocation, you think about it this way. But also we can look at it differently in terms of the factor allocation. And by that, I mean factors such as interest rates, growth, say inflation, for instance, which also determine how investors are able to pick which asset classes. For instance, you've seen the interest rates because of the policies by the central bank. As of last year in August, they have been reducing the policy rate from 13% right now, around 9% thereabout. Because of that, we've seen that the treasury bills has come lower. And as a result of that, we are seeing also the money market funds, because typically money market funds invest in cash and near cash instruments, so the treasury bills, the fixed deposit rate. So all the returns in the segments, the short-term securities, have been dragged lower by this single move by the Central Bank of Kenya by lowering the interest rates. But if you look at it the other side, on equity side, you can think about even the prospects in the banking sector, because typically banking sector is an interest rate play. So you can think about even in terms of the business case to be made, businesses that the banks can now start lending to the real sector. We've seen even the private sector credit growth coming from a negative 2.9% beginning of this year. As of September, the latest data we have at 5%. So it's gone higher. So that is the proximate cause of the lowering in the interest rate. And also, if you think about how people look at stocks, because if you think about how to price stocks or the valuation of stocks, it's now looking at future cash flows and now discounting at the present. But now, what rate do you use to discount at the present? Looking at typically where the 10-year is, comparing the 10-year yield a year ago compared to right now, it has come lower. So that means that you're looking at prospects of higher valuations because you're discounting this future cash flows, assuming everything else is held constant, but now on lower yield. So that means that the valuation will be higher from that perspective. The other aspect is now on the earnings, stable inflation. Kenya shillings been also quite stable. The potential for earnings in this environment, at least there's a solid case to be made. So that's where the pivot in terms of the interest rate. By this, if you look at this one factor only, you can sort of, okay, yes, on one hand, the near cash returns are coming lower. But also I can shift to look at other equities, the higher risk side of that. That's one perspective of that. The other thing, obviously, that you can look at is not the GDP, another factor. Growth prospects at least starting to look brighter as compared to where we were. Look at the Purchasing Managers Index. The numbers basically showing private sector sentiment has turned from where it was contraction are now looking at more expansion. So that shows that typically the first line of defense in terms of people would start looking at the signaling, they look at the PMIs as one of the prospects, leading indicators, so to speak, of how the growth will be. So as it starts showing this kind of positive numbers, it heralds even growth, GDP should be slightly higher than it was, and ultimately even the earnings potential in terms of the real sector. And that's where equities come into play. From that, I think away from the asset allocation, asset looking at it, that, okay, it's just from an asset perspective, but also from the factor perspective, there's a case to be made from the shift that you've seen from the low risk assets higher up to the riskier assets, where equities has a significant play.
Before we unveil our winners, one last question here before we go to the top five. There's a temptation, and someone listening and watching this will be tempted to want to put their money in 2026 in what will be the winner here. What strategy or what would advice would you give when someone sees, hey, you've decided that this was the highest earning class of 2025 from your analysis and you've walked us through what were the factors? There's a temptation to just dump all your money in the winner for the previous year, and then, you know, things happen in the next year. What would be the advice when you're looking at the winners and deciding where to place your money for the next cycle?
To our viewers, this is episode 12 of Make Money. I think the first episodes, you walked through our viewers that past performance is not indicative of future performance. So I hope that they need to go back to the earlier episodes so far. So that is also the case to think, even as we head into 2026, that the past performance is not indicative of future performance. That's typically things that are put in fine print in any investments as you think about them. Typically, diversification is quite key, and not just put all your eggs in one asset class, so at least to diversify. Typically, we have this 60-40. It's like a rule of thumb 60-40 portfolio, whereby 60% of your portfolio in stocks and 40% of your portfolio in fixed income. May not necessarily work for everyone. If you think about it, people who are either senior citizens or closer to retirement, they may not have a significant part of their portfolio in stocks. Now they move towards the low risk, the fixed income, because of the safer appeal that is there with fixed income assets. For the Gen Zs, for the young people, at least stocks, they may stick to this 60-40 portfolio. But that notwithstanding, there's a case for diversification, at least because if one asset class has a rough year, as you've seen in the last couple of years, at least you can now be able to have a safeguard if you have diversified across different assets. So it's upon the clients, people who are watching us, to be able to diversify across the different asset classes. They have positives that they can be able to bring on the table, which will now counter some of the downside that other asset classes might potentially have coming to next year. So not that I have a crystal ball, because people may now come back to me if some of our predictions may not come into play, but at least you're safer at diversify away into different asset classes. And looking at even the returns that you've seen this year, it means that even at the bare minimum, you have to put your money to work in any of the asset classes. Even the safest asset classes, the low-risk asset classes, has a solid case as compared to putting your money under the bus and under the mattress. So there's a case of investing. And I think also people normally try to tend to compare with inflation, in the sense that, okay, they might look at inflation. For instance, the inflation in the month of October was around 4.9%. And then the thing that people now misunderstood is now to say, okay, put money in a place where it will beat that inflation. But remember, the inflation for October is backward looking. Investing, we are forward looking. So no one will tell us, or no one has that crystal glass to tell us in December 2026, like 12 months from now, where inflation will be, to be able to see probably this asset class beat inflation, because you don't have that foresight. But ultimately, you are better off investing in any asset class that is there, as opposed to putting your money under the mattress. So at the bare minimum, even if you start with money market fund, right now we are seeing that the rates are quite low, but you're better off as somebody who does not invest. So bare minimum, at least invest. Better still, diversify across different asset classes.
Now it's time for the winners. So Churchill, what we'll do here is drum rolls. I'll cue in from top five all the way to first, and maybe you can make 20-30 second comment on each. And just for the context of anyone following back at home or your place of work, we looked at investing 100,000 shillings at the end of 2024, so effectively around December 31st. And using the data available this far, we tried to work out where your money would be. So, Mr. Churchill, you're ready?
Yeah, sure.
All right, great. At fifth position with an 8.2% return, if you're in properties and you're selling a property and we just quantify your investment as 100,000, you'd have had just over 108,200 shillings, ranking fifth. For properties, what would you say on this asset class?
I mean, property acts as a hedge against inflation, the sense that what I was talking about earlier on, that you're better off at least investing in one of the asset classes. So property is one of the best hedges against inflation. So at 8.2%, looking at inflation over the course of this year, it's been at least moderate, but at 4%. So it has beat inflation over the course of this year. So assuming that you invested, as you said, you invested last year 100,000, now you're getting 108% inflation, the numbers you have as of October at 4%. So basically it's similar or it's closer to the inflation numbers that we'll get as of the end of this month. At least you're better off in real terms, 4% real terms. So you have managed to at least cushion yourself against the inflation that has been there in the course of this year.
In the fourth spot, we have commercial bank fixed deposits. And here we had a return of around 10.45%, meaning an investment of 100,000 shillings back into that account in December 31st would roughly earn you just over 110,000, closer to 110,500 shillings. Your take on fixed deposits and where they stand now?
It has come lower. And if you think about fixed deposits, our banks, as they try to mobilize their deposits, so they get fixed deposits as a way of assuring their deposits. And from deposits, they are able now to lend the money to clients. And so what we've seen over the course of this year, because of the fact that the interest rates has come lower, so that means that even the lending rates by banks holding everything else constant has come lower because of that. And justifiably, we've seen also deposit rates have come lower because it doesn't make sense for banks to be sitting on high deposits, whereas on the lending rate, it has come lower. So that speaks to the 10% that you've seen on the fixed deposits. But if you had compared this a year ago, we'd be looking at around 12%, 15% thereabout on fixed deposits. But not that notwithstanding, at least there's some decent returns even on these lower assets fixed deposits over the course of this year.
Moving it now to the medal position, so in the third position, bronze. And for bronze, we had the shillings into your one-year treasury bill, so effectively what you might see labeled as the 364-day paper. The average back in December 2024, which is what you would have locked in, would have had you at around 111,400 shillings. I know the rates have changed much, right? After that lock-in period we are just discussing, but what's your assessment on, you know, especially the short-term treasury papers?
Yeah, absolutely. I was saying a year ago, because you're talking about having invested this one-year T-bill a year ago, and look at where we were. We're coming from around 16% 3 months before that. That's around September 2024. That's at the point where we started seeing that the interest rates at the short end of the treasury bills starting to inch lower. So looking at 10%, at least it's been quite a steady run. Unfortunately, right now, because of the continued lowering in the interest rates, it has come much lower than that, yeah. But having said that, at least 10% and sort of comparing where inflation at the end of this month will be, is still giving you some positive real return, notwithstanding the decline in one-year treasury bill rates.
At second place, and Churchill, you both and I support a team that has really stuck around the second position. So absolutely, as we discuss this, you know, take your time with it, but we have our money market funds right around second position. If you go back to around the end of the year, the highest yielding money market fund had you at around 16.8%, meaning an investment of 100,000 would earn you 116,000 and a bit more and some change here above that. So that's 116,840 thereabout. The rates again have changed on this one, so it might not be moving to the first position the next time, as we hope our team would. But where does that leave MMF for you as an investment case?
Kefa, you know our team is moving first, Paul. So anyway, let's have it in another podcast. But on money market fund, we are still looking at the rates that were there pretty much a year ago at 16%, give or take. This is the return that you've had from money market fund, and largely where they're investing, because they're investing in cash and near cash. So typically the treasury bills, the fixed deposits. So I'm imagining that they locked these rates at a year ago. It takes a while before now we see the full impact of the lowering in the interest rates filtering through into the money market funds. But that notwithstanding, I mean, at 16%, it's still decent in this environment. Still might be lower if you look at what has played out over the course of this year. But you see, with money market funds, it's somewhere where you park your money as you still look at other opportunities. It's better than putting it under the mattress. So whatever rate you get, it's better. You're better off as you still scout for other opportunities that is out there. So money market funds, I mean, it's one of those things that investors should consider, even amidst all these negative or lower returns that has played out, as you still look for other opportunities.
So finally, moving into the first place where we all hope to be, drum rolls. We have quite by a country mile, equities outperforming every other asset class. As of now, you know, I mean, depending on when you look at it, we had the Nairobi average index, you know, Nairobi Securities, NASI, at 52.1%. So if you were to get that average here, that means your investment of 100,000 shillings would have earned you 152 shillings and about 100 shillings on top of that. So equities are the unbeatable. It's where we all wish to be in first place, and this is by a country mile. You know, you're talking over 30, maybe 40% spread, depending on the other contrasting asset class here. What made the difference for equities this year to make them, you know, the world beaters, we might call them that, or at least the country beaters from our perspective?
I think tactics by Arteta. Anyway, that's our team. But anyway, if you look at the 52% return from equities, it just shows the potential that is coming from equity side. Equities, you think about it, two different ways that you can make money. There's one of them is now the price appreciation on the prices of the stocks, and which has been quite something which has stood out for us over the course of this year. If you think about it, the where we are coming from, high interest rate regime and coming to a low interest regime, it made sense now to pivot to equity side because of also the earnings potentials, looking at even the macro environment, how it has panned out over the course of this year. So there's that case to be made in terms of the earnings potential. So this is basically investors putting their money into equities, now sort of showing us where the conviction play is, and that's where equities has been, the capital appreciation has come about. The other aspect to this is also on the dividends because of the earnings potential and looking at even the potential of dividend payouts in this environment. So that has at least given that conviction to investors to be able to move to equities. And unlike the other asset classes where it's typically a safer appeal play, equities is now sort of putting your all conviction play. It's a all conviction play. That's where equities is. It's taking for the long haul, not just for the short-term ride here. So that's something that is quite terrific in this current environment. Low interest rates, stable macroeconomic fundamentals. Yeah, so it's notwithstanding how equities has performed. And I hope our team should be able to
become the equities exactly. Of 2026.
Absolutely, absolutely, without a doubt.
There you have it, your top five interests or your top five places where investors made their money in 2025. And that has been Churchill Ogutu. He's an economist at IC Group. And we hope to see you among the winners in 2026,
absolutely,
Mr. Churchill.
Absolutely.
Great. And that has been another episode of Make Money, the podcast. And as you go about December, enjoy your holidays. And we hope you're among the winners in 2025. And if not, we hope you can be able to pick out some of your winning investment plays in 2026. So happy holidays. And until I catch you on the next episode, this has been Make Money. And as always, remember, even during the holidays, as you spend your money, make that money work for you still. Goodbye.